All right, ladies, welcome once again to your Venus Index podcast. I'm Brad Howard, and I've got John Barbin on the phone. And today, we're going to talk about, ultimately, why we started BMR when we talk about weight loss or trying to lose body fat as the starting point for calculating how much food you need to eat on a daily, quote-unquote, an average daily basis. And in this particular podcast, we're going to talk about the burn part of the equation. As far as your daily activities, your actual metabolism, how that works, and the mistakes and errors that kind of come across with all of this, including the noise, and then why people think their metabolism actually drops when it really doesn't on this particular end. Again, we're just going to talk about the burn side or the caloric expenditure side. So, John, let's go ahead and start with this. I mean, what components of kind of, let's just say, what makes up the burn?
Okay, so that's why we started BMR. The main thing that's burning calories on a daily basis is just the sum total of your metabolism, which is your basal metabolic rate. So if you don't do anything today, let's say you just have a really lazy day and you wake up and all you do is make it to the couch and you're just watching TV. Well, just to be alive and sitting there doing nothing, you're going to burn your kind of base level of calories. And you can't really go below that. I suppose sleeping, you'd burn a little bit less. But being awake and just sitting around, that's what we would call basal or resting metabolic rate. Those two numbers are slightly different. Basal's, you've got to be lying down. Resting, you could be sitting up. So either way, the term that gets used all the time is basal metabolic rate. So that's the amount of calories you're going to burn if you don't do anything. If you don't get up, walk around, exercise, you don't go to the mall or shopping, or you're doing absolutely nothing besides just sitting around. So we start there because we know no matter what you do that day, that's at least the lowest amount of calories you'll ever burn is your BMR. And then from there, and we know you're going to do that every day because as long as you're alive, that's the amount you're burning. So you're going to be doing that every day. So that's why we start at that amount of calories. And then anything else you do on top of, as far as activity-wise, gets added to that sort of calculation. So let's just say, hypothetically, you look up some of our charts and you come up with 1,300 calories as your BMR for the day. So, and that doesn't mean that's exactly your BMR. That just means we're guessing, based on scientific data, that someone of your height and size is likely somewhere close to 1,300. Because to be clear, it's impossible for you to actually know it specifically without having it tested in a lab. So if you estimate it, and that's in all of our materials, all we do is try to estimate as best as possible, and then from there you have to sort of work off of that number. So if you estimate that your BMR is, let's say 1,300, maybe you're a 5'2" woman, from there, if you do more exercise, then for that day, if you do anything more than just sit around, for that day you're going to burn the 1,300 plus whatever extra energy you expended in the gym, walking around. Let's say you just had a busy day and you were just doing a lot of stuff. That all adds to your caloric burn for the day. The thing is, this is why it's difficult to rely on exercise for losing weight, because you likely don't exercise every single day, or you don't exercise at the same length or intensity each day. So the amount of calories you're burning in a day is hard to determine if your exercise isn't exactly the same every single day. But your BMR is the same every single day. So that's why we start there, and then we use exercise as kind of a bonus add-on to that. And at least that way you're being consistent with the way you're kind of imagining how many calories you're burning.
Right. Now, I guess some of the other assumptions that come in that we make, not assumptions, but there are a couple other things that you've mentioned in the past that people just aren't aware of, that another reason why we started BMR. I guess one was talking about the natural inclination of your body to eat up to your energy expenditure for the day. Mm-hmm. So that's why diet's important. And then so I guess let's talk about
stop
that
right there. Okay, so like you just said, our hunger satiety system. So what makes you feel hungry and then what makes you afterwards feel kind of full and not really hungry functions on more or less energy expenditure. I mean, so if you don't do anything in a day, your BMR is all the calories you can possibly burn because you haven't done anything on top of it. But that means you'll likely feel hungry enough throughout the day to eat up to BMR. So if your BMR, again, in our example, is 1300 and you sort of don't really do much during the day, more often than not, your body's going to try to get you to eat up to about 1300 calories for the day. Now, if you add in a long, strenuous exercise and you burn an extra 500, now you're going to feel like eating 1300 plus 5, like 1800. And you're likely going to be that much more hungry. So it's pretty finely tuned. However much energy you burn in a day, your body's likely going to kind of poke you and bug you to put that much energy back. So that's why we start a BMR, because trying to eat to lose weight, on the days you don't exercise, you would need to go below BMR. On the days you do exercise, you theoretically could eat up to BMR and then create the deficit with the exercise. But in both cases, you're going to be left feeling hungry because you've burned more calories than you've eaten. So the feeling will be almost the same. It's just how many calories you choose to eat and how much of a deficit you want. So in other words, you could sit around doing nothing all day and just eat 500 calories below BMR, and you're always going to have that sort of, I guess, if you could picture it one way, a 500 calorie need to eat. And then if you eat all the way up to BMR one day, but then exercise extra 500 calories off, you're still going to have that 500 calorie need to eat feeling. So in both cases, the feeling will be more or less the same. And you've just either eaten more and added an exercise, or eaten less, but you just below BMR, but you still have that deficit.
Right. All right, well, let's talk about the other side of the equation. So we talk about metabolism whenever we say metabolism, we mean BMR, correct?
That's more or less. So there's BMR and energy expenditure.
Right.
And so BMR is just the amount of energy you burn just from your body just doing its thing, just being alive. And then energy expenditure, if you do nothing besides just hanging out, your energy expenditure will be your BMR. But if you add in purposeful exercise, then your energy expenditure is your BMR plus the exercise.
Okay. Well, let's talk about unconscious expenditure.
Okay, so just like the actual metabolism, like things you're not
I mean just lifestyle.
Oh, lifestyle. Okay.
Like, we're talking about the job stuff.
Okay, non-purposeful. Stuff. Okay, so there's a difference. There's two kinds of activity, I guess, that you partake in a day. And this is more a division of a scientific distinction for classifying what you do from a lifestyle perspective. So in other words, we can go to the gym and we can do an hour walk and call that a workout. Or we can walk for an hour during the day, like just going back and forth from let's say we go shopping. Let's say during work you have a certain distance you walk at work. Clearly it's still walking, right? Like all it is walking. You burn the same amount of calories walking at work as you do at the gym. The difference is, and to categorize this, is whether or not you have a lifestyle, like a lifestyle that you're bound to, that you don't have a choice to not do. Whether or not you have a lifestyle that causes you to do more energy or burn more energy or do more exercise versus having to force it in the gym purposefully and consciously by booking exercise time. So it seems as though people who have busier type jobs, like I always use the example of someone who's a server who gets going at work and has a 5 or 6 hour run where they're just on their feet going and they just don't stop. That's literally like a 5 or 6 hour workout. And there's really no way you could ever mimic that in the gym. Because if you compared someone who has a serving job to someone who just sits at a desk, the servers, if it's busy, again, I don't mean a serving job where she's just standing or he or she's just standing there doing nothing. But I mean, if you're actually busy, you're going to be moving a lot during that shift versus someone else who's just sitting there. So if you actually are walking for 3-4 hours during your shift, if the other person who just sits around at work, they would to recreate that amount of energy expenditure, they would actually have to book a 3 or 4 hour workout where they're walking. So from a practical standpoint, there's almost no workout that could ever make up for actually having a busy job. And a job that has you on your feet moving around, like someone who does landscaping or someone who's on their feet and moving all the way through their day, they burn a lot more calories during the day than any workout could ever replace, because the workout would end up having to take all day, which means you'd literally just have to have either all day to work out, or you just have to take on one of those type of jobs.
Right, which for most people just ain't happening. That's the whole point.
Now, it doesn't mean that those people are inherently leaner than everyone else. It just means that they can burn a lot more calories at work if they choose to. But like we said, they're going to feel like eating up to that level. So it could very well be that those people they just eat more if they're not losing weight. And I mean, it doesn't, and clearly that probably happens, because most people that are active all day long, it doesn't mean that they're all like perfectly lean. It's, right. You know, you can gain weight having a really busy serving job too.
Right. And, you know, there's some other, you know, more scientific things that we can go into in another podcast that make up energy expenditure as well. But these are just the basic ones that we wanted to cover. And, kind of go into some of the mistakes that people make with these, because, you know, this is where, you know, where the rubber meets the road, and why people think that their metabolism sucks is lower than anybody else's, and why they're broken and things like that. So I really wanted to touch on those. So let's talk about measuring energy expenditure and the mistakes and error percentages involved in that.
Okay, so the energy, your basal metabolic rate, what makes up your metabolism is all of your lean body mass. Now, your lean body mass is made up of two major compartments. It's your internal organs and then your muscle mass. And so most people make the mistake of assuming lean body mass just means muscles, but they don't realize that all your internal organs are incorporated into lean mass, including your bones, and they're the more metabolically active tissue. So if we just had a little chunk of muscle tissue and a little chunk of liver tissue head-to-head at the exact same size, so like a square inch of liver tissue, a live active metabolic liver tissue, or a square inch of live metabolic active muscle tissue, the liver tissue would be magnitudes more active and burn way more calories than the muscle. So the only difference, the reason muscle mass even matters at all, is because there's just way more muscle mass on your body than there is liver tissue or kidney tissue. Like those, comparatively speaking, your liver is not as big as all the muscle you have. But metabolically, it's way more active.
Right.
So like 80% of your metabolic rate is controlled by your internal organs. So there's almost no amount of muscle mass you can build to really affect your metabolic rate.
Right. Now, it will affect it, but it's not the dramatic increase.
The overall amount of muscle you have does have some effect on your metabolic rate. But you would need to triple or quadruple the amount of muscle you have for it to really, really start changing your metabolic rate. Because right. a pound of muscle burns about 5 calories an hour, a day. Like, that's not much.
Like, right.
So if you could build another pound, so you've increased your metabolic rate by 5 calories, it's nothing.
So even theoretically putting 50 pounds of muscle on you, you'd burn...
So yeah. 25 more calories. It's just not gonna do anything. It's just not really gonna have any effect.
Right. So yeah. So overall, I mean, you're looking at basically a nil. So when but trust us, we're not talking about not weight training, because clearly there are other benefits to that. But weight training to try to increase metabolism.
That's not one of them.
Yeah, it's not.
Weight training while you're dieting to maintain your muscle mass is important. Like, sure. There's a bunch of reasons why we do weight training. First and foremost is the shape of your body. I mean, the whole point of doing weights is to build muscle, shape, and kind of tighten it, and so you have the shape that you want.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah,
and
exactly.
And then as far as metabolic rate, it's almost completely determined by your internal organs. So that's scalable for how big you are. So if you're a foot taller than someone else, all of your organs are bigger too. Like, that's part of why your you have more muscle because a taller body has more muscle, but your organs are also bigger too. So you're likely going to have somewhat of a higher metabolic rate simply for that reason.
Right. Which kind of goes back into the whole point of why, husbands and wives shouldn't eat the same amount at dinner or, stuff like that. And I guess we'll talk about this in the eating portion of this part of it. But, all right, so we've got the mistakes as far as that's concerned. Let's talk about mistakes in actually measuring how much your expenditure is as far as, you know, things like body bugs and the machines and...
Well, the machines at the gym... okay, so net calories burned is something no one ever thinks about. And you've got to remember that your beta... Okay, so your basal metabolic rate, the amount of calories you're burning just by hanging out, just doing whatever, that's happening, obviously, regardless if you do anything extra. So if you calculated out that you're burning, you know, 1,300 calories a day, and that work, I don't know if that works out to about 60 calories an hour. So if you're just sitting around, you're burning 60 calories an hour. If you go to the gym and do an hour workout, and the machine says it was a 350 calorie workout, that you burned 350 calories, that means that for that hour, the calculation it's doing said that during that hour, you burned a total of 360 calories. It doesn't mean you burned 360 calories on top of the 60 that your metabolic rate already was. It just means that you've gone up from a 60 calorie an hour burn rate to a 360 calorie an hour burn rate. So your net difference is only
350.
Yeah, your net difference is only 300 calories or 290. I said 350.
Right.
You see what I mean? So you've got to subtract the extra calories you burned from what you would have burned anyways from your metabolic rate.
Right. So those calculations actually...
It's because the way exercise physiology textbooks and calculations, the way they determine how many calories any given exercise burns... They don't calculate out how much more it burned than your metabolic rate. They just calculate how much they measure someone for the hour, and they're like, "Oh, you burned 300 calories this hour." But that just means for that hour you burned 300 instead of 60. It doesn't mean you burned 300 on top of the 60. And most people completely miss that. They just think, "Oh, the thing said I burned 300, so that means I burned 300 more today." That would really mean you burned 60 minus, like 300 minus 60, like so 240 more, whatever.
Right. So if you, it makes a big deal. That's a huge error. I mean, that could be, you know, what, 100, 150 calories.
If you make that mistake 3-4 times a week with your calorie counting, you could make a 300-400 calorie error, and then 3 weeks later you're wondering that you've only lost 1 pound instead of 2 pounds.
Right. Or gained.
Or gained, yeah. Yeah, so yeah. That's called net calorie burn, and no one thinks of that.
Right. Yeah, well, you see that a lot. People talk about, you know, they're on the treadmill, they're working out, and you know, they don't feel like they've lost any body fat, but they're gaining weight, so it must be that I'm turning fat into muscle.
Well, and also people think that making these errors in their burn calculation is part of the reason why people get discouraged and think, oh, dieting just doesn't work, or exercise doesn't work, or they're losing lean mass, so they're doing all this work, but they're metabolically aren't burning enough. Like, it's – people try to – someone in the forum said something about being 24 calories off for the day based on her calculations. Yeah. And I was thinking, well, that's not – that you could never know that. Like, no one could ever calculate their calories that closely to know that they were off by 24 calories.
Right.
There's so many inherent errors, and we're not even talking about the calories inside. We're just talking about the calories outside. The problem with trying to do this is both sides of the equation are unknown. And in our next podcast, we'll talk about the other side of the equation. So the equation being calories in versus calories out, you can never know how many calories you're actually eating, and you can never know how many calories you're actually burning, unless you do it all in a metabolic lab that you're just not doing that. That's impossible. So you can never actually know, no matter, even if you read your labels, you can never actually know. We'll get into why that's actually almost impossible to do. And then on the burn side, everything's just an estimate. Like, without actually having your metabolism measured directly by calorimetry, you would never really know how many calories you're actually burning. We can only guess. We can only guess. And then from there, and that's why we start a BMR. That's where your guess starts. It starts at BMR. And then from there, you experiment with food up and down, and you experiment with exercise up and down until you've more or less got it. And as you overeat and undereat, and now this is an even more of a kicker. If you massively overeat or massively undereat, your metabolic rate does shift up and down slightly with it, but magnitudes lower. So if you overeat by 2,000 calories, you might bump up your calorie burn by, I don't know, 150. or 200. So you still have 1,800 extra calories that are going to get stored.
Yeah, same and then thing if with you, under eating.
Yeah, then if you under eat by 1,000, yeah, you might your metabolic rate might slow down by 100 calories, but you're still in a 900 calorie deficit, so that's good.
Right. So that's the scary metabolic drop that everybody's talking about.
Yeah, 100
calories.
Yeah. So the point is, everything fluxes with everything else, so it's really hard to – you can never pinpoint the exact number of calories you burnt in a day. That's just – that's absurd.
Okay. Well, let's say this because we said this on the men's side. But I think we need to say it for the women's side, and I think we really need to bang this down. But you have to remember that there's no such thing as independent variables in this whole thing. Everything is dependent on everything else.
Yeah. Like we just said, you eat a little bit more, your metabolic rate will go up a little bit. You eat a little bit less, it'll go down a bit. If your body weight decreases, like if you're just weigh less, you'll burn less calories from doing any kind of cardio because now you're moving around a lighter body.
Okay. Let's go into that really quickly.
Yeah. So if you're doing body weight dependent cardio, meaning you're moving your body, so like running, jogging, elliptical, anything where your body's moving, biking is different because you're sitting, so it doesn't matter how heavy you are. But a body weight dependent cardio, the lighter your body gets, the less work you're doing, meaning the less calories you're burning. So if I go for, if I'm 200 pounds and go for a 10 kilometer walk, I'll burn a certain number of calories moving 200 pounds 10 kilometers. But and let's say I've got my diet in control, and let's say I'm losing weight. Let's say I'm actively losing weight. You know, if 2 months later I'm 180 pounds, well, on that 10K walk, I've only moved 180 pounds 10 kilometers. Now I'm burning less calories per time walked. And then if I drop to 170 pounds, that same 10 kilometers does even less calorie burning. So I actually become the amount of exercise you have to do as you get lighter has to go up to burn more calories. You actually have to walk further because right. You're moving less body around. Or the only other way to do it is to add weight to your body, but that's kind of really uncomfortable.
Yeah, you'd have to put a weight vest on.
Yeah.
Or you have to weigh yourself beforehand and then...
You wanted to match the calories you burnt during the first, when you were the heaviest.
Right, but that's what we mean. That's what matters. I mean, if everything changes, you know, the only way to actually know to keep everything the same would be to keep everything the same, all your variables that you control the same. And see, this is
so everything's linked. You pull the string on one end and the other side comes to you. And I think that's partly why losing weight towards the end, as you get leaner and leaner, becomes more difficult because one of the other dependent variables is your psychology. When you've got 60, 70, 80 pounds to lose, it comes off fast because you're not just losing fat, you're kind of dropping some inflammation and probably dropping some serious water retention. So the same, I guess, amount of what seems as though effort and calorie cutting ends up knocking significant weight off your frame. Whereas if you're down to the last 10 pounds, all the inflammation's kind of gone, all the bloat's kind of gone. There really is just a few pounds of fat to go, which takes longer to do. But also when you're at that last little stage, you probably look pretty good as far as you're concerned, and you probably are like, oh man, it's hard to stay motivated to get those last few pounds off when in clothes you already look as good as you're going to look. And at that point, like the last 10 pounds doesn't really show much through clothes. Like you probably, like it's hard for it to see the difference. So unless you're literally standing in front of a mirror without clothes on, it's hard for you or anyone to know what the next 2 months of effort or month of effort is going to be, because everyone's like, well, you look good. Why are you going any further? And you're like, well, but there's still a little bit I want to get rid of. But no one can see that. And, yeah, I mean, it's really happens a lot on guys, because especially the way guys' clothes are cut. For a guy who's got even 15 more pounds to go, in clothes, you'd never know. He'd look identical if he lost the 15 or not. Like if a guy who went from being literally six, like before he gets to a full six-pack, but looks really good, has good muscle mass and everything, just has to get rid of 10 more pounds to really see a six-pack. In clothes, you'd never know the difference. He'd just look like the same guy. And so the feedback, you'd get all that extra work until someone saw you with your shirt off. No one would ever know that there was any work to do. For girls, it's a bit different because a lot of girls in general, their clothes are tighter. So maybe those last 10 pounds show a bit more. But in general, it's not like you're going to be dropping dress sizes and pants sizes like huge. You might drop another couple of sizes. But in general, you're probably already pretty happy with your body the way it looks when you're got that last 10 to go. So I don't know that the last 10 pounds are any harder than the first 10 so much as psychologically, the difference in how much better you're going to look is going to be kind of small. And the social feedback you're going to get, people are like, well, why are you still going? Like, you look good now.
Yeah, that's right when you start getting to that area, to what we call the naked look, because the clothes on versus the clothes off look, that's when the blowback starts to happen.
Yeah, because people are looking at you and you're working and they're looking back at you saying, you already look better than everyone. Like, what are you doing? And but they're perceiving you with clothes on, and you're thinking, well, yeah, there's a couple of spots, you know, when I see myself in the mirror, I'd like to tighten those up. So you're thinking from a clothes-off perspective, but they're looking at you from a clothes-on perspective, and it's almost, that's where some of the, like you said, the blowback or like the lack of support comes from, because they're looking at you thinking you're obsessive, and you're like, well, but, you know, in a bikini, I still like to tighten this and that up.
Right, exactly. So, all right, well, let's kind of wrap this up and talk and just really encapsulate all the mistakes that can come across really quickly from the burning side, as well as why, kind of encapsulate like what would happen at 200 pounds versus 120, and talk about the differences in the actual burn in that aspect, so that people don't really, you know, when they start losing and they start like, man, it's just getting slower and slower and slower. Am I doing something wrong? My metabolism dropping, blah, blah, blah. So we can actually alleviate that fear and just let the women know exactly what's going on and predict exactly what's going to happen, so that you know, so you don't freak out and you kind of keep the nose to the grindstone. All right?
Sure. Okay. So well, that's why we start with BMR, because you know that's at least the minimum calories you're going to burn every day, and trying to eat below BMR, or at least determining your BMR is the best place to start, and then working below that to burn fat is your most consistent kind of standby go-to measurement. You don't want to – I wouldn't assume that you're going to exercise every day, because you likely won't. But you are going to burn up to your BMR every day, because, you know, as long as you're alive, that's how much you're going to burn. So that's why we always use BMR as our default. The girls shouldn't compare themselves to guys, and this is a big reason why women should never eat as much as guys, because guys are bigger. Their BMRs just across the board are bigger because they have more lean body mass. And I sometimes say this is the portion sizes and like the food industry in general seems to be built to guy size, not to girl size. And that's why girls who start on a weight loss journey quickly realize everything seems to be calibrated up to the size a guy would eat, but not down to the size a girl would eat. So portion sizes in general that you'll ever find anywhere seem to be more like, for us, not you, which kind of sucks for girls, because when you look at what people get served, you usually end up having to cut way back on it versus what a guy would have to cut back on. And it's, you know, it's the difference between as if everything was calibrated to women and guys would just have to be ordering two and three times as much to satisfy what they want. It's just sort of, you guys have to eat two or three times less because everything's calibrated up to us, so to speak.
Right. Gotcha.
And then as far as calorie burn goes, a purposeful burn in the gym, just keep in mind that those every calculator you see, and even textbooks or online, when you read how many calories a particular exercise could burn in a given number of time, like an hour, that's always the total amount burnt in that hour, which means you have to subtract what your hourly metabolic rate would have been from that number to come up with how many extra calories that actually burned. And finally, no matter how much work you do, you could work out for 10 hours today. The point is you're going to feel 10 hours hungrier, all of that extra work hungrier. So if you burn an extra 1,000 calories today, your body's going to bug you to eat 1,000 more calories. So no matter if you create the deficit just by eating less or if you create it by exercising, that nagging need to eat will be more or less the same.
Right. I mean, they call it working up an appetite for a reason.
Mm-hmm. You can work up an appetite or eat down an appetite, but either way, like the appetite, you could almost argue is just calibrated to the amount of calories that are missing, so to speak.
Sure. So, all right. So let's add up the errors really quickly. And then this is why we started BMR. I'm gonna show you right now
the first error, BMR itself. We can't know it. Yeah. We can only guess at it.
Yeah. So you're probably looking at right there just with BMR, maybe 10% error.
Yeah, you could be. You could. I mean, if you calculate it, if our equations calculate you at 1300, you could very well be 1450 or 1150.
Right, exactly. So you got 10% error there off the bat.
Yeah, and the only way you can try to determine it is by experimentation. But again, since you can't really know the calories in, you can only ever guess at it. So there's an error right there. The other error is the amount of calories burned during exercise. Even the best equations still have anywhere between a 20 and 30% error. So you can't really know how many calories you burn during exercise. You can only guess at that too.
So that's let's say 20% just as far as the actual equation. Now, that doesn't count people not subtracting out the net.
The net, right? Subtracting out your BMR. So that's kind of another little error people keep making.
So that's probably 30% error on that calculation.
Mm-hmm.
Or let's say 20. Let's round it down. So 20% right there. So you've got a 10% error on one number, a 20% error on another number, a 20% error on another number. Mm-hmm. Then if we take into account what you burn at 200 pounds versus what you burn at 150 pounds, I mean, that's going to be totally different, yet people don't take that into consideration.
Yeah, yeah. Well, and then there's a fourth one, efficiency. If you do regular running as your form of calorie burning, at least in the gym, the better you get at it, the less you burn, because the body just becomes more efficient at any exercise when it does it over and over again. So right. there's a double thing going on there. And now, if you're just a seasoned runner and you've been running for a long time, you've long since reached your peak efficiency. But people who just pick up exercise for the first time, any exercise you pick up for the first time, you're going to be horribly inefficient at, and you'll burn extra calories just because you're wobbly. You're just not that good at it. But as you become efficient, you literally just are so much more balanced and better at it. You burn less calories doing it. You're just actually better at it. So right. That's another form of you just don't burn as many as you become efficient.
Which is one of the reasons intervals become less effective as people become trained.
Mm, it happens with everything. It happens anything you do chronically, you just get better at.
Yeah, that's kind of one of the things, since it's the exercise portion, you know, I've asked what people think about interval training. I mean, if you've been interval training for over a year, I mean, chances are the epoch probably isn't that big of a deal at all.
Yeah, you're burning less than you did the first time you'd picked them up. Doesn't mean they're not burning calories. It just means you become efficient. And let's say a year ago, they managed to burn 200 calories in a session. You may be down to 170 calories. And if you're lighter, you're for sure burning less because now you're moving a lighter body around.
Sure. So, I mean, but these are assumptions too. This is what I'm saying. We're going into all these assumptions of what you can do. I mean, if you're a year later and you're thinking that your exercise post oxygen consumption or whatever is higher, I mean, basically, the bit more in shape you get, the faster you catch your breath. That's essentially what that is.
Yep.
You know, if you catch your breath faster, well, guess what? Then that effect that everybody's touting isn't that big of a deal. It's a big deal in untrained people, but in trained people, not that big of a deal. You catch your breath faster.
But all that means is you did more work. But we can get into that another time.
Sure, but again, these are assumptions that are leading to errors that end up
crippling your fat loss progress because you don't realize you're not. Yeah.
Right. So at the end of the day. At the end of the day, what you're seeing with all these errors is the only thing you can really guesstimate. Everything, the more as you get into more and more shape, because like I said, you burn more calories at 200 pounds than you do at 150, and that's just throughout the day, just walking around. I mean, that's in everything you do. Lighter people physically just are going to burn less calories, just living. You know, that's just how it is. So, you know, you've got that, and you know all these other things. It's almost like your body trends toward your BMR. The more in shape you get, the more it trends that way. Does that make sense? It's like your calorie burn, you get more efficient, you get, you know, it's almost like everything starts to trend down that way.
Well, smaller people burn less calories. That's just, there's no other way of saying that. So if you're going to be smaller, you're going to burn less calories.
Right. So
given the same amount of work.
Right. Overall.
Yeah.
And then
fat mass doesn't really affect BMR. So if you lose 50 pounds of fat, your BMR is likely the same when you were the same.
Yeah, your BMR is the same, but the work part of the equation would end up being different because you're a bigger person. So
yeah, when you were bigger, a 10K walk would have burned way more calories. But now that you're smaller, that same 10K walk burns way less calories.
Exactly. So like I say, you can see, and we haven't even gotten to the eating part of this. This is
just the eating part, there's way more errors on the other side. So let's just leave it at this. These are all the errors you can make trying to guess how many calories you've burnt in a day.
Right, which is why when you're trying to lose, we say don't take any exercise into consideration.
Consider it a bonus. Completely consider it a bonus on top of BMR.
Right, exactly. Consider it a bonus.
And if you do all your calculations that way, you'll be doing – now, I mean, if you've got things right under control, like if you've done enough experimenting to the point where you've at least come close to guessing at what your BMR actually is and how many calories you might be eating, then and only then can you actually really start counting how many calories you may have burned in the gym. But I mean, you have to, but when I say that, you still have to consider all these errors we're making, or all these inherent errors in the calculations. So it takes a bit of time before you can even bother to try to include exercise as your part of your burn, so to speak.
Right, exactly. I mean, and for the beginner, you know, this is just easier. It's just easier to start with. It makes more sense, because, and there's just so many more errors that you can come across with. Mm-hmm. Go ahead.
You almost have to view it like you got to give yourself a week or two of steady state. I guess controlling your calories, you got to give yourself a week or two just to learn how these errors work. Like you probably mm-hmm. need to spend a couple of weeks eating right on the button of a particular calorie level and being really consistent with a particular kind of exercise, and then using our little error calculations to figure out if that exercise is even burning the calories you think it can burn. Like you literally need to do little mini experiments just to figure out how close or not close any of your calculations even are. So I don't even know how you would know this stuff if you didn't spend at least 2-3 months trying to figure it out.
Right.
Like just because an elliptical machine said you likely burned 300 calories in an hour, and let's say you subtract the 300 from what you think your metabolic rate is, so let's say you subtract 60 from that hour, so now you think you've created a 240 calorie deficit with that exercise. How the hell are you actually going to measure if you actually had a 240 calorie deficit if you didn't eat exactly right on a specific calorie level for the next 10 days in a row, such that you could eventually see 1 pound of weight loss? Like, do you see how impossible this is to figure out how many calories were actually burned?
Yeah, and we're not even taking into consideration, which I don't know if this happens, but I could see it being possible, that the equipment manufacturer actually would boost up the perceived calorie exertion so that the gym or whatever would buy more of those types of machines.
Oh, well, and regardless of that, even if that happens, and I wouldn't doubt that some of them do. Like, and the thing is, you can go on different machines for the same amount of time, different machines that are more or less the same style, and one will say you burned 800, the other one will say you burned 5. It's like, you know, how can any of that actually be accurate?
Right, exactly. And you're sitting there and you're wondering why nothing's happening. Mm-hmm. You know, it's just pretty much the reason why. I mean, if you walk in the gym and pretty much over a course of 6 months, most of the people that stay on the cardio machines never get any results that I can physically with my eye see. It just never happens.
They all look the same. The only people that ever make a change and have people look at them and go, "Whoa, you've improved," it's because they've tightened the screws down on their diet.
Yeah, it's always the weight training and tightening down the diet. So that's why just to close it out. I mean, trying to account for exercise just adds way too much complexity to even worry about for somebody, especially beginning. I mean, I wouldn't even start worrying about it, to be honest, until
the last 10 pounds, maybe.
Yeah, the last 10. I mean, maybe we should do a podcast or something around the last 10.
Yeah, I'm going through that right now, and I have very good insights on when you can actually do this and how that using exercise for weight loss is misinterpreted or misrepresented as something people who have anything more than just 5 or 10 to go can even bother using.
Yeah, I mean, and we'll talk about this. Like I say, these are just covering the errors of burn right now. Next time we'll cover
the errors of intake.
Of food. Yeah, of intake, and these things are huge. They're going to blow your mind. And so, and why focusing on all the other stuff that people are trying to focus on is really going to kill you.
Completely missing the boat. It's like rearranging. Once you hear about the errors on intake, I always describe it as rearranging the deck chairs on the Titanic while it sinks.
Yeah, exactly.
Instead of trying to fix the hole in the boat.
Right, exactly. That's exactly what it is, and it's really funny. So, all right, so there you go. Those are the errors with calorie burn and perceptions, things like that. So our base recommendation always is to not even include that, you know, until you're seasoned enough to understand it, where you only got about 10 pounds to go. And even then,
don't even include exercise as part of your calorie burn, and just consider work off of BMR for now.
Yeah, I even the guys on the guys, and I don't know anybody that worked off of
exercise. Everybody just worked off of BMR. Like all those transformation guys worked off of BMR as their number.
Right, exactly. Yep. And then finally, I'll just close out with this, and we'll talk about it next time. But the big reason is because at some point you have to figure out what your maintenance levels are. That's the most important thing with actually being able to maintain, is to actually understand how much you do get to eat on a daily, on a weekend and week out basis. Remember, we talk about weeks. We don't talk about days.
Yeah, and how much you get to eat independent of any exercise, because exercise is never the same, right? It's fluctuating, transient. Some days you don't. Some days you do more. So you can't really rely on exercise. You have to kind of know, that's a great point. You have to really know how much you can eat on a day when you don't exercise. And once you know that, or at least you're really close to knowing that, then you can start learning what you can get away with or not get away with exercise.
Yep. And we'll talk about that next time, because it's really important. And I think it's the reason why we've so far been insulated about any type of bounce back or anything like that, as far as people regaining a lot of weight, is because this type of education is what guards against that. So. All right, well, I think we've got that covered. You want to? You got anything else you want to talk about real quick?
No, I think that's good.
All right, well, a couple of really quick things. We're going to be doing all of our interviews for the all of the Adonis side winners, and we're going to be posting them over there. We'll be doing two a week, just to help give you some insights on what you need to do, and just get a handle on what they did on that side. Usually we only do one a week, and actually be one every other week, but because January's coming up and it's going to be a big contest, we're kind of cramming them down so that we can get you the best education we can as fast as possible. So just expect that. And I guess that's about it. So for John Barbin, I'm Brad Howard, and that's your Venus Index Podcast.